Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician and CVPM Angel Martin.
Hey, y'all.
Each week, we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an insight and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode number 138 is once again being brought to you by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. So, beautiful
today. April, today it's beautiful.
Spring, Georgia, this is why we live here.
Yes.
Yesterday, not so beautiful.
Right.
But we are recording the podcast Sunday. The fourth round of the Masters is currently going on as we speak. Who do you think is going to win, Angel?
I don't know anything about the Masters. I feel like Scott Sherwin Williams, something. I don't know.
Scheffler, I think his last name
okay,
is.
Okay, yeah. I know he was leading. Yeah. As of yesterday, I know nothing about it thereafter. Yeah.
He's doing well. Big story was Tiger Woods, 14 months ago, car wreck, almost lost his leg. They wound up... I'd really like to know how they put his leg back together. Just personal curiosity. They said with screws and pins versus plates. So I wonder if that's anywhere out there on the internet, if you could see like a picture of his pre-op and post-op fracture repair.
I don't know. I think that's kind of a weird request, but maybe we'll see if we can find something.
Yeah, let's see if we can find something. We'll post it if we can find it, but I don't know. Yeah, as you know, and many others, that I'm super into orthopedics, and I don't know. I'd just be interested to know how they fixed it.
Yeah, sure.
But he was walking around. I was watching him during the first round. And it's his right, I almost said his right rear leg. It's his right leg that was broken. And I'm trying to watch for like lameness, right? Like a head bob and a gimp and some of these other things. And I never really saw that. When I thought I would see it, then I would see it on the other leg as well. So
again, I know nothing about golf, but he's right-handed, correct?
Correct.
So like if he's right-handed and he's putting all of his weight
more
on
weight
his
there,
right
yeah.
leg.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's, in order for him to be playing, you would think he's got to be well recovered.
Yeah, he's played. He played a tournament with his son maybe 3 or 4 months ago. They came in second, father-son kind of a tournament thing. So he is a pretty remarkable athlete, though, to do what he's done. And what, he won the Masters a year or two ago or three, I don't know, with COVID, I can't keep up, but he came back and won it not too long ago within the past several years, then had the car wreck. And so everybody thought it was going to be a storybook ending that he would come back and win. But last I checked, he was tied for like 36th. So
my understanding, as I am looking at the internet at the moment,
and this is a veterinary podcast, by the way.
I know, but I found an image essentially of his horrific injuries. And so he broke in three places his tibula.
Well, it does say tibula, but that's not real. Tibia.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure I'm going to believe the post, but
that's
I heard
actually hysterical. Yes, but it does say tibia and tibula and fibula, which it's yeah. not. It's tibia and fibula. But anyways, yeah. nonetheless, you're asking about pins and screws, and so what they have
shown here.
That
looks like an interlocking nail, is what that looks like to me.
What they've put here, though, is just like one
pin,
essentially.
Intramedullary pin, and then yeah. some screws at the top and screws at the bottom. And I think he was bedridden for quite a while. So.
Yeah, and the screws at the bottom are essentially just to stabilize his ankle bones as well. So,
yeah.
again, to your
yeah.
point,
tibula.
The fact that it says tibula,
yeah,
I don't know if we can trust
but
that image.
It could be an interlocking nail.
But, interesting fact, as you mentioned, this is a veterinary podcast, but dogs are very different than people, but one of the things that are very similar is that our bone structure in mm-hmm. our legs and arms are named the same thing.
Yeah, that's true.
So dogs...
And the bones are basically shaped the same way.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest differences, so when we get into the torn cranial cruciate ligament in a dog or cat rarely versus a torn anterior cruciate ligament or ACL in a person, obviously... Most humans stand on two legs, upright position. Dogs are on four.
Correct.
And so we get into the anatomical descriptions of cranial is towards the dog's nose, caudal towards the tail, And then with people, it's anterior in front and posterior in the
Posterior.
back. So, you know, that's always a big point. Anterior cruciate's the same as a cranial cruciate. So, we're like going all over the place, but it
Yeah,
is a
but
veterinary podcast.
it is a
So,
veterinary podcast, but I always found that that's one of those things that are very, very interesting. Even though they do walk on four legs per se, their leg bones are the same as our arm
yeah,
bones.
it's a good point.
So I always thought that was super
Radius and all
interesting.
on a dog, they're actually bearing more weight on the front legs than the rear legs. And human beings, again, most are walking on two legs, not four. But yeah, very, very similar. So yeah, very
Yes.
cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Speaking of, we're gonna kind of be all over the place today, as most everybody can tell at this point.
Well, we always are these
We do
days.
have a fur kid rescue that came in yesterday that has a distal femoral fracture through the growth plate. And everybody always thinks those are such horrible fractures and are
So,
not repairable,
you
but
ex
they actually
sorry.
are very repairable.
You explained anterior, posterior, cranial, and
Oh, I said
caudal.
distal.
You said distal. What does
Okay.
distal mean?
So I may not get this right. I know what it means, but I may not be able to explain it. So anterior, posterior, or cranial caudal, analogous to proximal distal. It is a descriptor of towards the center of the body is more proximal, away from the center of the body is distal. So
Usually describing the limbs.
usually, but could be like the distal pinna if you're talking about an ear.
I guess. So an extremity, because you don't talk distal on the body, you talk
Yeah,
dorsal.
away from the trunk of the body.
Yes.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yep.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So, I mean.
So while we're on the whole subject, let's keep going through the descriptors. This is going to be for Dr. Reese's enjoyment here, because
But
I'm
there's
sure we're going to
tons
leave
we
some
could
things
spend
out.
all day on
Yeah,
this.
but another is medial and lateral, right?
Yes.
Medial meniscus, let's go back to the knee. Medial meniscus, lateral meniscus. Medial means towards the center of the body or inside. Lateral means outside. Same nomenclature for people, right? Because I tore my medial meniscus and had a scoping procedure done.
As far as I know, yeah, that medical
So,
terminology is synonymous.
yeah. So, anyway, there's lots of those.
So let's talk. You mentioned the pinna. So the pinna is the ear
The ear
flap.
flap, yeah.
And so then what is rostral?
Rostrals toward the nose.
So do you only speak rostral when you're talking about things on the head?
Typically.
So that's what I'm saying, like the whole distal, proximal, dorsal, those things you would only talk about on the body versus the extremity, that
Yes,
kind of thing.
medical nomenclature is quite fascinating. I mean, I'm sitting here looking at Dorland's Medical Dictionary, which was one of the books I bought in my first semester of vet school. And it just really is cool. So if we're talking GI tract, right? Towards the mouth, away from the mouth. Do you remember what those are?
No.
Orad, aborad. So you're talking about as things move through the GI tract. Let's say I'm in the proximal, so this is a little bit different, jejunum versus the distal jejunum. I could also say, you know, I'm in the more ORAD segments of the small intestine versus the aborad away from
So
the mouth.
that actually brings me to adduction abduction,
Oh,
which I
gosh.
could never ever remember. As far as like, I guess, what is it? Positioning? I don't even know what you
You
call
know,
it,
I
but.
used to know this, and there was a little. I'm going to be embarrassed to say I'm probably going to get it wrong, but you know, adduction, you add to, and then abduction, I believe, is rotated out. And so I think adduction is into, and abduction is rotated out. But we need to look this up because I am getting older, and some of these phrases and things I used to know, I don't know anymore.
So, abduction is the movement of the limb away from the midline of the body.
Okay, so like cows used to tear their adductor muscles, and so yeah, they would split out.
Yeah. So,
Scissor or scissor leg, yeah.
abduction and adduction was always very difficult for me, but you mentioned that you went to the gym yesterday. My sister and I, we both joined a gym recently, and we've been a little nervous to get on some of the machines, right? Like we're mostly doing cardio at this moment in time. But I remember back to when I was working out with a personal trainer, we used to do abductive and adductive movements on the machines, and the machines would have little pictorial things and they would describe it that way. So like if you're working your quadriceps and you're using that machine to lift the weight and put it back, it's like, how do I explain? The personal trainer used to say, like, on the upward motion or on the abduction motion going away from the body, that you want to pulse like really fast, and then on the adduction or when you're coming back to the body, you want to go really slow and allow that resistance. So it was those things are always very tricky for me.
I'm gonna look this up because I'm getting confused, but keep talking.
No, that's all I had. you're looking it up in the Dorland's Medical Dictionary at the moment. Did you find it?
No, I'm kind of slow with the dictionary. That's one of my weaknesses, is looking things up.
So think about your arm. When you put your arm perpendicular to the floor, it is adduction. When you raise it away from your body, parallel to the floor, that's abduction.
Adduct, to draw towards the median, plane, or in the digits towards the, to draw towards the median plane or towards the axial line of the limb. So you adduct, you bring it back into the median plane.
Right, center. As I said.
Okay.
So just like when I was working out, it's kind of interesting that you only think about it in medical, but like when you're working out, essentially that is sometimes they use medical lingo as well.
Your abductors. So, okay. All right. Anyway, let's move on.
Fun stuff.
We went to a Fur Kids gala, the 20th anniversary of Fur Kids is a group locally that we work with quite extensively as far as rescue organizations, shelter organizations. So we
took was their 20th anniversary, and it was a fundraising gala.
Yeah, Jackson Galaxy was there. For all you cat people, you know who that is. If you're not a cat person, you probably don't have a clue as to who he is. But we met him for the second time and spent a little time with him. You know, good for them. We got to tour their new campus. Everything was really, really cool. You brought up a story earlier that another...
Well, similar but different, right?
Zub, is it like a rescue type? Is it like Yellow River Game Ranch?
Similar, yes.
They rescue these exotic pets, and now they call it a zoo.
Yes.
And we're not talking Atlanta Zoo, San Diego Zoo. We're talking...
No, not at all. So let's simplify things here in the moment. So Fur Kids, while like animals are animals, Fur Kids is strictly like small animal companion, dogs and cats.
Correct.
They're their largest no-kill shelter in the Southeast.
Yep.
And then what you're talking about is more local to us. Like, they're obviously pretty local, but there is a zoo, essentially. It's called the Hand-Me-Down Zoo in Winder, Georgia, that recently caught fire. So my understanding of a Hand-Me-Down Zoo is exactly that. It started with the...
That's why it's
like
called that. Yeah.
People who would get animals and then not want them, which kind of ties into our whole Easter talk here in a moment. But, yes, yeah, so that is, from what I understand, how that happened.
Okay. So, yeah, there was unfortunately a fire that went through the facilities, and the owner, I forget her name, but we saw the story. She was trying to rescue all the animals and had some help. I think the firefighters showed up, and now they're asking for donations and support because for some reason their insurance is not going to cover what happened. But that's sad. I thought about, you know, our groomer Kim. She came to us after a veterinary clinic that did groom within the hospital burned down.
Yeah.
And she didn't have a job for a while, and so we were able to provide her a position. And, you know, she said that was just a horrible situation, kind of being there and going. She wasn't there when the fire happened, but after the fact, you know, when a fire goes through your facility, that's got to be pretty devastating for everybody. And we talk about that, right, with our AHA accreditation. We have to have a fire plan, and what happens if your facility breaks out with fire. You know, where do the animals go, where do the people go, what is the fire plan? So
yeah, so just kind of looking at some of the news articles here, so the fire apparently started, what I'm understanding, with a split. And I don't know if that's a split like that an electrician didn't do or approved or not. I don't know. I'm not going to get into all of that. But potentially that was where the fire started. The zoo, just to kind of go back from the owner, is described as a place for abandoned and or abused animals. And they had about 300 animals in total, and 52 of them were burned alive in the fire.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah.
That's bad. So,
most of them being reptiles and birds. And obviously you can imagine the fear that is happening in a bird, likely a reptile as well, but with the birds, right? Like, they're so sensitive to like smoke and that kind of thing. And obviously they're going to try to escape. Just gosh, that sounds terrible. That's kind of one of your worst nightmares, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Burning down the place of sanction, if you will.
Yeah, no, that's horrible. So let's move on into Easter and bunnies and all the good and the bad and the indifferent of Easter.
So yeah, we've been doing this podcast for 138 episodes now, so we've passed through a couple of Easters. So this information is not new. It's obviously what we try to get out there a lot, but with stores like hardware stores and that kind of thing still kind of making it cutesy and available, we are seeing more and more people with backyard chickens. They're picking up little chicks at the farmers markets. They're picking up little baby bunnies that people breed, and then they bring them home for Easter, and then what do they do when they become full grown?
Right.
And so that's kind of the sad part, and that's what we've been talking about for years on this podcast. Please do not think that little pets like that are cute gifts to your family unless you plan on taking care of them for the rest of their life.
I don't know where the whole chicken thing came in, except Peeps, maybe.
They make really cute photos. Like, I've seen, like, I feel like the staged photo thing has been, like, a really popular deal since social media. And, like, you know, your families will be there, and, like, people will stage their children and whatever. So baby chicks make really cute photos.
But then they turn into chickens and
roosters.
But they
do turn into chickens and roosters. And so we have to be prepared for that. And we have to either have a plan or be willing to take care of them when that happens.
Okay. So we've talked about maybe it's not a good idea to give a bunny or a chicken, unless it's a chocolate bunny or a Peeps chicken, as a gift. What other concerns should our listeners be kind of thinking about regarding Easter?
Yeah, so with Easter, there's always toxins. I think that's where my brain goes instantly, right? So you have a bunch of people over at your house. You're having a big dinner. Maybe your pets are getting some foods from people that in your household that they wouldn't get.
So just table scrap food, you're saying?
Yep. So table scraps. And of course, you have to be conscious of how you're cooking foods, right? So high fatty foods can cause disease for your pet or illness.
So lamb or mutton, that is a traditional meat that many people will serve on Easter. It's kind of a sacrifice. It's kind of a weird, we're not going to go there.
Yeah, don't go there.
But back on the sheep farm in Ropesville, Texas, we used to always have people, one or two or three families come and want to buy a young lamb to slaughter and serve on Easter. Anyway, strange. But point being, mutton is quite fatty.
It's very fatty, yeah.
But what would be, I know you and your family are not super traditional when it comes to holidays, I don't think.
No.
Correct?
Correct.
So is there anything like on Easter that you remember y'all always had as a family unit?
Other than like an Easter egg hunt in the morning and like Easter baskets? Are you talking like meals?
Food,
no,
yeah.
Not really. No.
Yeah.
So my family is very different in the sense that like my mom grew up very Catholic, very tight with her family, and so they had big family dinners and things like that. But my mom and dad, when they were very young and I was honestly a newborn, they moved away. They moved from Michigan to Georgia, and so we didn't really see big family things on all holidays. And so as a small family of three, my mom, my dad, and myself, like, we kind of just did our own thing.
Okay. So long answer short is no.
Well,
no,
that's what
made,
I said already.
Yeah, major tradition there. So, Easter egg hunt. Would you, growing up, maybe not you, but would y'all buy eggs at the store, buy the little dye kit
with
the little wire circular thing with a handle on it, and you would make up your dye colors in your little Dixie
and
cups,
you dip,
and you would dip them, and they never were as brilliant as you wanted them to be.
Oh,
right?
Never, of course.
And so you'd dip it again, you'd dip it again, you'd dip it again, and you'd leave it in there for 5 minutes, and it kind of
turned brown.
Close, yeah. So did y'all do more of those eggs, or any of those eggs, or was it more the candied eggs? And the third egg would be the plastic shell that you put stuff in.
So as like a quote unquote tradition, if you will, like I always dipped or dyed eggs with my parents the night before the Easter bunny came. Right.
Okay.
So like taking religion out of it and making it more of a festive holiday, if you will. The night before the Easter bunny came, we would dip dye our eggs, and then
us
we would
well.
Kind of leave them out, quote unquote, like we would cookies for Santa. And then inadvertently, there would be some of those in my Easter basket as well. And then sometimes there were like rabbit droppings outside, which I now know were chocolate covered raisins.
Wow. Wow.
But yes, like that.
So the Easter basket, we're going to get back to pets eventually, but the Easter basket now, I was in Walmart, I hate to admit it, within the last week, and there were so many made up Easter baskets, right, that had cellophane over them and toys and candy and all that. And that is one way to get an Easter basket. But literally, I remember having a basket with, and I would always have green, blue, yellow, fake grass in the basket.
So relating that back to pets, that's a danger.
That's going to be a potential foreign body.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we would have our basket with the fake grass, and then we would go on the hunt. And when you found like a real egg, you're just like, oh man, it's a hard-boiled egg.
Yeah. And then in Texas, I'm sure if it stayed out there for a day or so, it real stinky.
Well, yeah, we typically found them all, so they didn't do that. But then you would have the candied eggs, which are really cool, and you eat the first a third of one, and you're like, this is awesome. And you take another bite, and you're like, wow, too much sugar.
The ones that are like marshmallowy in the middle,
like
they're
the yellow,
candied on the outside. Okay,
yeah,
I know what you're talking about. Yes.
And then you would find
the
fake
ones that
egg
are put together, the
plastic,
two
and you would shake it, and you're thinking you're going to get something really good, and you'd open it up, and there'd be a little, you know, two cent ring or something in it. So
yeah. So speaking of that, right? So we used to go grocery shopping when I was a kid at Winn-Dixie here in Buford. And they always had this little, I don't know, quarter machine, if you will.
To get the little rings.
To get a toy out of.
Yeah.
But it was a Flintstone, and he would drop like little dinosaur eggs. So you'd put your quarter in, and he would say, yabba dabba doo. And then you would get this like dinosaur egg that like popped out.
Eraser.
And it was exactly that. It was the egg kind of shoved together. Interesting. Again, like.
Yeah.
Dinosaurs lay eggs,
so
chickens
lay
eggs. Super weird.
Let's get back to pets. So foreign material, whether it's the grass, I've never known a pet to eat like one of the plastic egg shells that we're talking about. Chocolate is toxic to pets, but not really. You probably a 10-pound dog could eat a regular hollow chocolate bunny, milk chocolate, and be okay. We really worry about the baking chocolate, that really dark chocolate or the super.
Yeah, but nowadays when they're making a lot of these chocolates, they're making them with the fake sugars or the xylitol. They're not fake. They're
so
just,
we need to worry about that. Yeah.
They're,
that's a good
what
point.
What do you even call it? I don't even know. It's not fake. It's like
sugar
a sugar
substitute.
Alcohol.
Yeah.
It's a sugar alcohol, that xylitol. And so that is actually pretty toxic. And so they don't make, you know, essentially milk chocolate.
Right.
Things like they used to, I guess. But yeah, so candy, you have your grass, you have obviously any sort
candy
of
wrappers,
little
things
trinkets
like that.
And toys like that.
It's kind of amazing. Most dogs can pass a lot of cloth material or wrappers and whatnot. It will just kind of go on through.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not suggesting you try this, but
you don't.
You know, some of the really giant breeds of dogs, they can eat an entire plush dog toy and everything passes through. But anyway, so foreign bodies, chocolate toxicity.
The one thing we didn't talk
toxicity.
About were those beautiful plants that people put in their homes around
Easter.
Easter
lily.
the true lilies, right? Like the Easter lilies. Yes. So those can be both dangerous to your cats and your dogs, causing some GI issues.
And we've talked about that in the past. They can cause like a local irritation in the mouth when they eat them.
Mm-hmm.
They can cause other gastroenteritis as it's passed through. But what we do see in cats is we see rhinoliths, which most people would say kidney stone. When people talk about kidney stones, they often are talking about a kidney stone that starts in the kidney, passes through down the ureter into the bladder, and then you quote unquote have passed your kidney stone.
Right.
And so
that happens in humans, you're saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we see stones in cats, kind of asymptomatic. We'll take an x-ray and see multiple stones within the kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
They're not really a clinical problem, but what we do see.
Sorry.
Petco. But what we do see when we talk about stones, clinical stones in animals, it's usually a cystolith or a urinary bladder stone. So anyway.
So the story that you just heard kind of behind the scenes here, what was going on is, do you remember American Humane? If you don't, you should. I won the 2019 American Humane Hero Pet Nurse Award. And since kind of being introduced to American Humane, I follow them quite closely these days.
Okay.
But American Humane, I learned then, goes on the sets of a lot of movie things.
To make sure the animals are treated
exactly
humanely.
It's all about the humane care of animals. And so they have talked about how Petco is now the first American Humane certified pet provider. I think that is a lot. So hopefully American Humane will now start some regulatory processes with like the small animals and the birds that they are carrying. Nothing against Petco, but we have had veterinarians on staff before that were, I guess they had deals with the Petco stores. And so we would see a lot of those Petco pets coming in, or those animals. And essentially they had uneducated people there caring for them, you know, mm-hmm. just store clerks. And the husbandry was always a problem. So
right.
We would see like geckos that were impacted because they were on the wrong type of bedding material, or we would see a lot of hamsters with wet tail and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I think this is fantastic, and I don't think it can come at a greater time other than now. So
okay, cool. Petco a few years ago started going more towards the preservative free, a little more of a holistic approach to pet products as well. So they're kind of doing their own thing a little bit differently. But yeah, kudos to American Humane in what they do and their focus. So
last thing I have about Easter and pets, and then we can wrap up, is that, again, I'm not a huge proponent of PetSmart for a lot of reasons. I think that there can be some disasters that happen because people take their pets there, and who knows what, how well they're taking care of.
During the shopping process, you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's great that you can take your pets to stores, but I also feel like there's some negative to it. But anyways, that is neither here nor there. My point in bringing it up is that PetSmart will be hosting a free Easter photo with your pet and the Easter bunny for Easter 2022.
Okay.
So I don't know when in your local PetSmart or things like that. But I know how challenging that can be because we've done that with Santa photos here. So kudos
right.
to them for
right.
opening up to the public.
Okay, good, good. All right, well, I have nothing further to discuss other than we still are working on, you know, perhaps a name change and maybe refocusing our podcast. But we're going to still kind of be popping in and out with some of these episodes. And then once we can get everything figured out, we will kind of roll out maybe a little bit of a change moving forward.
Yeah. So, I mean, that might explain why we're not as consistent as we once were, right?
Yeah.
But nonetheless, check in next week or in the next couple of weeks as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Check us out on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. If we can, we'll try to post some photos related to this podcast there. Check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys.